Morning. Today's daf in Menachos is Ayin Tes. We are in Ayin Ches Amud Beis. We're halfway down on the Amud. Tana Rabbanan is right at the midpoint. Last two words in the line begins with the words Tana Rabbanan. Discussion has been and continues to be in the eighth parak. The carbon toda, special carbon that's brought in the base of Mikdash. When a person survives perhaps a life threatening event. So he expresses his gratitude to Hakadosh Baruch Hu when he brings the carbon toda. Carbon toda is a unique carbon in that it's a shlamim, but there are subtle differences in the carbon itself in terms of time of consumption other than regular shlamim. Regular shlamim is eaten for 2 days with the night in between. Carbon toda is only eaten for 1 day and the following night. Next morning it becomes nosar. So it has to be consumed basically within 1 day. And the other notable difference, which is why it makes it into the Masechet Menachos, is because it has mincha, it has loaves of bread. 40 loaves of bread, we discussed the first and second day of the perek. That would be Friday and Shabbos. So we discussed really technical aspects in terms of the construct of the 40 loaves of bread, the content of flour in the 40 loaves of bread, how each of the series of 10 are prepared, and that's what we discussed in the last number of days. We begin with a brisa. The brisa, before we start, before we start with the brisa, we already learned over the course of yesterday that in order for the bread to be imbued with kedusha sukkuf, so it has to be prepared before the shechting of the carbon. So that means to say the shechting of the carbon is that which is giving the bread the kedusha sukkuf, and the bread has to be prepared. Prepared, by the way, as we learned yesterday's daf, means that it has to be fully baked. If any of the bread is not fully baked, so then even one loaf is not fully baked, so then the bread is not going to be imbued with Kedusha. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes a brisa, yotze mematzana. Let's say the bread is slightly undercooked. Now, I keep using the word bread. Please understand that for most of Menachos, it's not bread in the sense that we view it, meaning our bread is chametz, it's risen. Most of the Menachos are not, but okay. But anyway, purpose of this discussion, whether it's chametz or whether it's non-chametz, it's going to be the same exact point, which is that if it's a little bit underbaked, that's okay. The word na means slightly underdone. We know na most popularly with the Karban Pesach, right? The Torah says regarding the Karban Pesach that we're not allowed to make it na. In other words, the Karban Pesach has to be roasted and has to be fully roasted. It can't be rare. Can't be maybe medium rare wouldn't be okay as well. But in other words, that's where we're familiar with the term na. Na also is used here in the Gemara in the context of being slightly underbaked. So yotze mematzah na. Now, if you make your matzah and you make it either na or you make it in a pan or in some sort of let's call it a pan. So that would be okay. So my matzah na, the Gemara says, give me a definition of what that means. I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm a Shmuel Kosher Parsav Ein Chut Nimshach and Heimenu. So the Gemara says, as far as matzah being underdone, so when you break it apart, so there aren't strings basically holding it together. Straight, right? In other words, it's so underdone that basically you're looking at the dough just basically stringing out. So that would be considered too underdone. So as long as it breaks and as long as it's a clean break, and again, don't think in your minds right now about the matzah that we eat. The matzah we eat is burnt, right, by design. So in other words, when you break it, it's just going to crumble. In other words, back then, so the matzah was more soft, it was bread-like, and so therefore when you actually separate it, so it's going to make a separation. As long as it doesn't string, because it's so doughy, so that would be okay. Amar Rava, the Gemara continues, v'chein len yelach metoda. This halach is not only true regarding matzah, meaning matzah up until now has been used in the classic sense of matzah by Pesach, but the same thing is true regarding lach metoda, pshita. The Gemara says, now, at this point in time, it would seem to be obvious. If underbaked is okay by matzah of Pesach, so lach metoda, why should it be any different? So hacha lachem ksiv, hacha lachem ksiv. You know the Torah says lachem by both, meaning the Torah describes matzah as being lachem. The Torah describes lach metoda as being lachem. So why would I have thought there was a difference? Now there is no difference. But at least what's the havamina? So ma detema echad amar rachman shaloyito parus, v'hankaman deprisadamya kamash malan. As we learned already a number of times, so you have to give a unit over to a kohen. Now when it comes to lach metoda, by unit we mean one of ten. Meaning you're going to make four different types of bread. You're making your chametz, you're making your chalas rekikin and revucha. And what we'll learn together is that every time that you make 10 loaves of each, you have to give one of them in hand to the kohen. And echad tells us that it has to be a unit. As a havamina goes, I might have thought, Well, if it's a little bit underdone, so that's it's considered as if it's not unified. And so therefore it doesn't satisfy the obligation of unit. That's not how the Minhag Hamashmalan, the Chiddush is otherwise. The Chiddush is, no, it's still considered a unit, and so therefore it would work not only by Matzah, it would work by Lach Metoda as well. Itmar. Gemara continues with a discussion which should sound familiar. It is familiar. This is not the first time the Gemara brings up this topic. It comes up a number of other places as well. We saw this earlier in the Masechet. We saw this in Erevin. We saw this in Kedushin. Okay, and that is the following. So let's say a person brings his carbon toda. He's really happy. He has tremendous gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He brings his carbon, and we know the Torah's instructions is to bring 40 loaves. But he decides, out of his gratitude, he's really grateful, so he now is going to bring 80 loaves. Now, why is he bringing 80 loaves? If he's bringing 80 loaves because he's trying to rewrite the Torah, that's no good. It doesn't work. Meaning, clearly, the Torah gives instructions, so we follow instructions, and adding more to it may be a violation of Baal Tosif. Let's not even entertain the discussion, as the Gemara itself doesn't turn its attention to Baal Tosif. Really, what the Gemara is focusing on is that when you're bringing 80 and the Torah's instructions is 40, so what does that mean in terms of which of the loaves, if any, are going to be imbued with Kedusha Tzagof? So, Torah Sheshach Shmonim Chalos Chizki Amar Kachu Arbe Mitoch Shmonim Rav Yochanan Amar Lo Kiddushu Arbe Mitoch Shmonim. So what we have over here is a machlokis amongst the Amoraim, whether 40 of the loaves receive Kedusha Tzagof. Again, we know that the Kedusha Tzagof obtained by the bread is only going to be when you shech the carbon. But over here, or not, before we get to over here, in a classic scenario, you have 40 loaves ready, prepared. And then when you shech the animal, they're going to be imbued with Kedusha Tzagof. Over here now, you have 80. So that's 40 more than what you need. So now, So basically what happens, in one way, well, the Gemara is going to go over both presentations of how we could say 40 of 80 or maybe 0 of 80. The Gemara goes on to explain. Well, before we go on to explain, the two positions in the Gemara laid out is Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan. Chizkiah says that 40 of the 80 become imbued with Kedusha. Now, which 40 and how to make that determination of which 40? Okay, that's in of itself an important question, but not one we're going to be focusing on. And Rav Yochanan says, no, 0. Lo kishu arbe misoch shmonim, meaning none of them become kadosh, being that you brought simply too many. And the Gemara goes now. The Gemara goes on to explain. If the person makes a declaration and he says, "I want 40 of the 80 to be imbued with kedusha," that's good. Meaning, and what are the extra 40? Let's call them an insurance policy. In other words, maybe some of the loaves aren't going to work out, whatever the case is, but he knows that he only needs to be Mekayesh 40 of the 80, and he states it, so fine. Well, there's no disagreement now. And al yiktishu arbe melim king yiktishu shmonim lo kitshu. And if, let's say, the person says, look, I want all 80 to have Kedusha Tzagof. If that's the person's declaration, so then none of them become Kadosh, because simply put, he's not following the instructions of the Torah. And in other words, then the Torah says 40, and 40 means 40, and 40 does not mean 80. And 80 do not have the ability to have received Kedusha Tzagof if that is not the instruction of the Torah. So in those extreme cases, there's no debate. Where he says 40 of the 80, everyone agrees. If he says 80 of the 80, everyone agrees. Ki pliki bistama, the subject of the machlokis is where he made no declaration. He simply handed over to the Kohen an animal and 80 loaves, and he made no declaration. Now, admittedly, at that point in time, what the Kohen should do is the Kohen should clarify. Why are you bringing 80? What's the game plan over here? Okay, but under the circumstances where the Gemara right now is much more interested in the conceptual, excuse me, and the analysis, and basically without a declaration, what are we left to assume? So Mar Savla Achray is Kamechavin, and Mar Savla Karben Gadol Kamechavin. And so right now, the way the Gemara first presents it, the machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah is basically, let's try to mind read. Now, we're not really trying to mind read. In other words, but what is the general thinking of people under such circumstances? Is a person generally bringing the extra 40 just simply as a chayas, as an insurance policy? Or is the extra 40, meaning the intent of the person, is to bring carbon gadol? Meaning, I don't want to bring 40, I want to bring 80. So that could be one way to present the machlokas. In fact, that is one way to present the machlokas. The Gemara is going to give no less than three other ways to present the machlokas. Abayi amar dekuli ama la'achrayas kamechavin. So the Abai is of the opinion that everyone generally is of the position that it is the extras are for insurance purposes. And the Gemara says over here, basically, when you put it into a kli sharis, because you're putting these loaves into a kli sharis, so when you place them into a kli sharis, will a kli sharis identify and earmark what their purposes are? Meaning, basically, in the absence of you giving clear instructions, can a kli sharis basically direct, reroute the loaves to basically what it should be? And so the Gemara is suggesting now, Abai is suggesting that perhaps this is a machlokus between Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan as to whether or not a kli sharis has the ability to reroute in the absence of you giving clear instruction and direction. That's the second way to explain the machlokus. The Gemara presents a third way. Rav Papa Amar Dekulei Amar Kli Sharis Mekachin Shelo Midas. Rav Papa is of the opinion that a kli sharis works and reroutes whatever's placed inside of it, even without positive intent given by the owner. And over here, what is subject to debate is the following: the knife. Now, obviously, the knife has, I'm going to say, nothing to do with the bread, but that's not true. But in other words, the knife is not directly coming into contact with the bread, but what is the knife? The knife is there to shech the animal, which in turn is going to imbue the bread with Kedusha Saguf. Marsavra Mikadesh is Kikli Sharis. And now, basically, is a knife have kli sharis quality to it? Meaning, we know that a kli sharis itself is able to reroute and redirect in the absence of instruction. Are we going to see it the same thing regarding the knife? Because really, it's not the kli sharis that's giving its kedusha, it's the knife shechting the animal, which is really providing the kedusha, and could be that the machlokes between Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan is whether or not the knife, it has the same quality as a kli sharis. And if you recall, not so long ago, we had a very basic discussion, not really in the Gemara, but in the Rishonim, Tosfos discusses this. You'll forgive me, I forgot the daf, but the Tosfos discusses whether or not a knife has a actual kli sharis status to it. Okay, but be that as it may, that's another way to explain the machlokas, and ikad amre, and a fourth possible way to explain the machlokas, Rav Papa amre dekulei amre kli sharis emekashin elamidas. Rav Papa says, no, the starting point of these amaraim is that a kli sharis cannot reroute. In other words, if no instruction is given, when something is put into a kli sharis, kli sharis can't do anything more than that. That's generally the position of both amaraim as it relates to a kli sharis. V'hachi b'sakin kamiflegi, and over here, what is subject to debate is the actual knife itself. Mar sever, sakin alima mikli sharis, avagav deleis leitoch mikadasha. One position is that, you know, a knife is actually better than a kli sharis, whereas a kli sharis cannot do anything to reroute the karbon, but a knife, on the other hand, can. A knife has more ability than the actual kli sharis. Really interesting. What's the basis of that? What's the svar behind that? I need to think more about that to try to formulate something, but that's one possibility. And the other way to view it is know that a knife is no better or worse than a kli sharis. If a kli sharis cannot reroute or redirect the contents that's being put therein, same thing could be said regarding a knife. A knife is no better than a kli sharis, no worse than a kli sharis, no better than a kli sharis. And so therefore, if you're bringing 80 and you didn't give instruction, so the kli sharis isn't going to help, the knife isn't going to help, and that's another way to view the machlokas. So, machlokas between Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan, what happens if a person brings, instead of 40, 80 loaves? Machlokas in terms of whether the 80 loaves are going to be imbued with Kedusha, not 80, but 40 of the 80. And if you give clear directive in terms of why you're bringing 80, so then no machlokas. If you give no directive, so then we have a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah. What is the machlokas predicated on? So the Gemara just provided us four different ways to analyze the machlokas between the Amoraim. Okay. We're on the Mishnah. We're 9 Ches Amud Beis. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. Shachta chutz l'zman v'chutz l'mkoma. Kidei shalachem. So here now we begin with a discussion in the Mishnah in terms of when you shecht your karban with a intent that will disqualify the karban, is the bread going to be imbued with kedusha? So again, it goes back to the basic point that we started off with this morning, which really the Mishnah started on the top of the Samud, and that is the idea that the bread will be imbued with kedusha seguf only with the shechita of the karban, of the karban toda. Let's say you shecht the karban toda with a machshavas apsul, and the Mishnah opens up with the classics of chutz hazman and chutz hamkama, as we discussed extensively in Zvachim, and a little bit of Menachos as well, but really extensively in Zvachim, the idea of Chutz Hazman and Chutz Hamkama is that when the Kohen is doing any one of the four avodas, he has in mind and he articulates that he's going to either eat the carbon beyond the allotted time, or eat the carbon beyond its allotted place. So these are psulim of the carbon. Carbon will be disqualified. This psul is referred to as pigul. If you recall, there's a basic difference between chutzas mano and chutzim kamo. By chutzas mano, if let's say he successfully, and this is not the kind of success a kohen would want, but if he successfully rendered the carbon a chutzas mano machshava, meaning he finished off the avoda with the chutzas mano machshava, so then the resulting carbon now is called pigul, and anyone who eats from that is subject to the kari's penalty. As opposed to chutzim kamo, where when the kohen says, I want to eat it outside its prescribed place, it disqualifies the carbon, but the consumption of that carbon is not going to result in pigul. Good. All that are just the ABCs to get us to this Mishnah. Once we know all that, so that what this Mishnah is teaching us is something which is perhaps, I'd say, a little counterintuitive. And that is that if a kohen, while shechting the carbon todah, has either of these machshavas in mind, either chutzas man or chutzim kamo, so then the Mishnah says the bread is imbued with kedushas aguf. I said it's a little bit counterintuitive, meaning he just rendered the carbon disqualified, and meanwhile, the bread now has obtained kedushas aguf. Why should that be? So hold that thought. We're going to come back to that. Shech levanim says treifa lo kiddush alechem. If, however, let's say he shechted the carbon toda, and the carbon toda turned out to be a treifa, meaning after shechita and after opening of the animal, an examination has showed us that the animal actually is a treifa. Now, we're going to assume that the treifa condition, it did not just simply materialize, but it was here prior to the shechita. So therefore, that means to say that when he shechted it, it was a treifa, and therefore, it does not imbue the bread with kedushas aguf. Shechta v'nim says balas mum. What if he shechted the animal and the animal had a physical blemish? So Rabbi Eliezer amar kiddusha, chachamim amar lo kiddush. So Rabbi Eliezer said the bread is imbued with kedusha, and the chachamim say the bread is not imbued with kedusha. Now, this is a little bit difficult to understand. For the chachamim, it's not difficult to understand. Meaning the physical blemish that the animal had was a precondition. Meaning it certainly was there prior to the shechita. And so therefore, this falls like under the same category as treifa, as we mentioned just a moment ago. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's a bit of a head-scratcher. Meaning, if the animal turns out to be a treifa, which means that it was a treifa at the time of shechita, the bread is not imbued with kedusha, but a physical blemish, and the bread is going to be imbued with kedusha. So that's a struggle to understand. So stay tuned. Later, the Gemara is going to ask that very question. Shechta shelo lishma. If, let's say, you shechta the animal, shelo lishma, right? The first discussion that we had in Zvachim and Menachos, and that if I shech the animal and having another type of carbon in mind, v'chein ela maluim v'chein shnei kifsei atzeres sheshechtun shelo lishman, and then the Mishnah also goes over the other cases in the Beis Hamikdash where you have a carbon lechem attachment, where you shech the animal to give the bread its kedusha. The two other examples are the maluim, which we discussed a little bit yesterday, the 7 inaugural days prior to the opening of the Mishkan, and the kifsei atzeres, the two kvasim that are shechta and shvuos, which are giving the shtei halechem their kedusha. So if I have a machshav of shelo lishman, lo kidesh halechem, the lechem is not going to be imbued with kedusha. So a Mishnah that basically says that if while doing shechita something went wrong, so sometimes the bread is going to be imbued with kedusha and sometimes the bread is not. Perhaps the easiest way to say it, although it's not... Trying to give rhyme and reason to the Mishnah is a little bit tricky, but perhaps the easiest way to say it is that if it was a precondition, if the condition was there prior to the Shechita, so then that Shechita is not going to imbue with Kedusha. The example, that would be Treifa. If, however, let's say it wasn't a precondition, but rather it was a psul in the Shechita itself or any of the subsequent avodas, so then the bread will be imbued with Kedusha. That perhaps is the easiest way to say the Mishnah, although again, you have the problem of Baal Mum, you have the problem of Shelo Lishmo, so it's not exactly, the rule I gave is a nice rule, but it doesn't work out in every one of the scenarios. Okay, and with all that stated, so really, at this point in time, we don't have full understanding of the Mishnah, and quite honestly, it's just going to get a little bit more complicated, because what we're going to learn together is as follows. In the Mishnah, we had a machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. This happens occasionally in the Gemara, in that we have a machlokis tanaim, and then we have a subsequent machlokis tanaim about the earlier tanaim and what the parameters of the debate were. So here we have a machlokis between Rabbi Eliezer, and I know in the Mishnah it was the Tanakama, but let's now identify that it's Rabbi Yehoshua. You'll see how I know that. So we have a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, and then Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who were generations later, but still Tanayim, they're going to have a machlokes in terms of the parameter of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So it's machlokes with a compound machlokes. So, Masisa Mani Rabbi Meir D'Tanya. Now, our Mishnah is the Rav Meir version of the machlokes, meaning there are going to be two versions of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We don't know this yet. We're going to learn this in just a moment. But of the machlokes of the later Tanayim, meaning Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, our Mishnah is going with the Rav Meir version, not the Rabbi Yehuda version. In general, by the way, makes sense. Why? Because we have a general rule of Stam Mishnah K'Rav Meir. That generally speaking, when we have anonymous Mishnayos, it goes like Rav Meir. That's a general rule. The Rav Meir, who was a student of Rabbi Akiva, and most of the Stams are following the Mesorah of Rabbi Akiva. Fine. So, okay. I don't know if that perfectly fits in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is not really a Stam Mishnah, but okay. But in terms of a version of the Machlokas, our Mishnah is following Rav Meir's version. Now, let's unfold all the information that we need to know to really appreciate that our Mishnah is Rav Meir's version, not Rabbi Yehuda's version. Did Tanya. And here we begin now the Braisa. Okay, it's the Braisa is going to take us some time to get through, but it's really now going to unfurl all this information. Zeh HaKlal. This is the rule, which is Kol Sheh Pisulo Kodem Shechita. If the disqualification is a predating the shechita, it was a precondition, so lo kiddush alechem. So therefore, the bread is not going to be imbued with kedusha. However, pisulo acher shechita, if the psul is after the shechita, so kiddush alechem. So the bread is going to be imbued with kedusha. Shach lechutz l'zman v'chutzim koma. And now let's spell this out with the shechita of machshav v'chutz l'zman v'chutzim koma. So now the psul is occurring. Now I'm going to say after the shechita, but right, it's really same time, but for our purposes right now, we're going to call this after the shechita. So shachta chutzes manav chutzim kamo kiddush alechem. So the bread's going to be imbued with kedusha. Shachta v'nitzes treifa lo kiddush alechem. But if you shecht and turns out that the animal's a treifa, so the bread is not imbued with kedusha. Shachta v'nitzes balas mo. Now, if you shecht and the animal has a physical blemish, let's understand. Treifa is where one of the internal organs are punctured or severed. When we get to chulin, we're going to discuss this in real detail, in fine detail. But treifa is internal. Balmom is external. It's a physical blemish externally on the animal. So if you shecht it and the animal turns out to be physically blemished, meaning it was physically blemished, Rabbi Eliezer Amar Kiddush, Rabbi Yeshua Amar Lo Kiddush. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that the bread is imbued with Kedusha. Rav Yeshua says the bread is not imbued with Kedusha, and this is Rav Meir's understanding. Okay, if you've been following this Braisa well so far, you realize, like, we're done. Meaning, the whole point is our Mishnah follows Rav Meir's version, so if you do a match, you will find we have a match. Meaning, the Braisa we just learned is a perfect match to our Mishnah. Perfect, because that's exactly the point. This is Rav Meir's understanding of the Machlokas. So,
considered before or different?
Gemara is going to ask that question. Gemara is obviously going to be bothered by that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Continuing now in the Braisa, and now this is going to be Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the Machlokas. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, lo nechlugu Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, al sheshach v'nimtzes treifa shelo kiddush. If, let's say, you shecht it, and the animal was a treifa, the bread is not going to be imbued with Kedusha. Everyone agrees. And al chutzes mano shekidesh. And if the machshava was a chutzes mano, a machshava, so the bread is going to be imbued with Kedusha. The albamom shelo kiddush. And if it's a balmom, the bread is not going to be imbued with Kedusha. Good. And according to Rav Yehuda, these are all points of agreement. Where's the disagreement? The disagreement is going to be in the case of chutzim kamo. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Kiddush, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that it has Kedusha, and Rabbi Yehoshua Amar Lo Kiddush, Rabbi Yehoshua says that's not Kadosh. Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Now, in Rabbi Yehuda's version, so now the machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is only in one scenario, and that's chutzim kamo, where the Kohen, while doing any one of the avodas, may articulates and says, then I'm going to eat this carbon beyond its allotted place. Then, and only then, is there a debate whether or not the bread is going to be infused with Kedusha Seguf. For a moment, if we just think about it, it's really strange, according to Rabbi Yoshua. Consider, according to Rabbi Yoshua, and again, this is Rabbi Yehuda's version, according to Rabbi Yoshua, if you have a chutz zmano machshava, if the Kohen has a chutz zmano machshava, So then the bread will be imbued with Kedusha. If, however, you have a chosim komo machshava, the bread will not be infused with Kedusha. It's a little difficult to process. It's difficult to understand. Meaning, of the two, which one is more severe? They're both not good, but obviously the chosim mano is more severe than the chosim komo. And meanwhile, a chosim mano machshava will still give the bread Kedusha sagof, but a chosim komo will not? Okay. In other words, just I'm highlighting that just from a svara standpoint, it's difficult to understand. But Gemara is not going to raise that as an issue. But okay, but let's continue. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, continuing now in the Brisa. Hol v'chutzes mano pasul v'chutzem kama pasul. So ma chutzes mano kidesh af chutzem kama kidesh. So Rabbi Eliezer counters with what is now basically what I just argued, meaning as the difficulty for Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer says, let's think about this. If you're with me that chutzes mano is still going to imbue the bread with Kedusha Seguf, so chutzim kamo, same thing, right? They're basically the same. Again, I know there's a striking difference in terms of the penalty, but in terms of conceptually, a Kohen is having an articulation of eating something either beyond its prescribed time or place. So they're basically, it's the same idea. So if you're with me on chutzim kamo, you should be with chutzim kamo, right? So I'm Rav Yeshua, hov v'chutzim kamo pasol, ba'mum pasol, ma ba'mum lo kiddush, av chutzim kamo lo kiddush. So Rabbi Yeshua counters by saying, look, chutzim kamo is pasul and baal mum is pasul. These are both disqualifiers of a karban. And just like a baal mum does not imbue it with kedusha, so neither will chutzim kamo not imbue it with kedusha. So chutzim kamo lo kiddush. I'm a Rabbi Eliezer. I need to misil lechutzim mano. V'atadi misil baal mum. Nira lemidome. Im dome lechutzim mano nidoninim lechutzim mano. Im dome lebaal mum nidoninim lebaal mum. So Rabbi Eliezer's counter Rabbi Yeshua is really logical. Look, I'm ready to compare it to chutzes mano. You're ready to compare it to baal mum. Well, let's see which comparison is better. Whichever comparison is better, so that should be the resulting conclusion. And so his called Rabbi Eliezer Ladun. So Rabbi Eliezer says, well, okay, so let me open the floor. And I'll open the floor with the following. Danim psul machshava mi psul machshava vein, danim psul machshava mi psul aguf. I'm comparing chutzim kama to chutzes mano. Both of them are intent. Disqualifications of intent. Chutzes mano, the Kohen thinks and articulates how he's going to eat the carbon beyond the time. He didn't do anything other than just have a thought and articulate that thought. Chutzim kamo, same thing. Baal mum, on the other hand, is a physical blemish in the animal. So, of the comparison, so chutzes mano seems to be much more connected and aligned with chutzim kamo. Good. That's easy to understand. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Hisko Rabbi Yoshua ladon. And Rabbi Yoshua says, okay, but I'll counter with the following. So point number one says Rabbi Yoshua. Look, chutzim kamo and baal mum share the following. They're disqualifications. And of course, once disqualified, you're not allowed to eat it. Is there any resulting karis penalty? And the answer is no. As opposed to chutzim mano, is there a resulting karis penalty? The answer is yes. So, if I'm ready to make a comparison, I'm much more prepared to make a comparison for something that does not have kares to something that does not have kares. But meanwhile, chutzes mano, on the other hand, although I could see your side of it, but from my perspective, it has a kares penalty, therefore it is outstanding. It doesn't match. V'od, and Rabbi Yoshua says, I'd like to counter with another point as well. Nidoneinu mishalo lishmo, shepsu machshava v'ein bo kares. Look, well, let's go to the case of Shalol Shmo. It is the Psul Machshava, and there is no Kares. And so Rabbi Yoshua says, so on that point also, in addition to that, would seem to indicate that you see that there is a Machshava, and yet, in the Machshava of Shalol Shmo, so it does not imbue the bread with Kedusha. Good. Shasak Rabbi Eliezer. So at that point in time, Rabbi Eliezer was silenced. And interestingly enough, as we have now arrived at the conclusion of this Braisa, I told you it was a long Braisa. As we arrived at the conclusion of Braisa, so Rabbi Yoshua's comparison seems to be more favored than Rabbi Eliezer, although intuitively, as I pointed out just a couple of moments ago, right, I certainly would have favored Rabbi Eliezer's comparison. In other words, you know, on my limited thinking, but in other words, Rabbi Yoshua made not one but two counter arguments. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of the Braisa. Anyway, the entire purpose of us bringing in this brisa is to point out that of the two versions of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, we have a Rabbi Meir version and a Rabbi Yehuda version. Our Mishnah is working with the Rabbi Meir version, not with the Rabbi Yehuda version. The Rabbi Meir, Maishna Shachtav Nimsa Trefa, Davi Psula Kodim Shchita, or Maishna Shachtav Nimsa Balas Mom, Delo Avi Psula Kodim Shchita. So the Gemara says, now, let's try to wrap our head around a question which we already asked back in the Mishnah, but now the Gemara is going to articulate. If the animal is a trefa, so what does that mean? Trefa is a precondition. The trefa status of the animal existed before the shechita. We didn't know it, but that was in fact the case. So, and we said that because it existed prior to the shechita, so therefore the bread, the accompanying bread, is not going to be imbued with kedusha tzagof. Aren't we going to say the same thing by balmum? Meaning by balmum, the animal has a physical blemish, so that's also a precondition. And meanwhile, in the Mishnah, we said regarding a balmum that if you shecht it and the animal has a blemish, so so according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's going to be imbued with kedusha. But I don't understand. It's going to be imbued with kedusha, but it's a precondition. So the Gemara says, v'nimtzis balmum d'lav epsula karm shchita. So bedukin shebaayin v'alibed Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says no. When we are talking about a balmum, we're not talking about your standard physical blemish. You're right. A standard physical blemish is no different than a trefa. Just like a trefa is a precondition to the shechita, it existed before the shechita, and therefore that shechita is not going to imbue the bread with kedusha. If we were discussing a standard physical blemish, it's the same thing. We're not talking about a standard physical blemish. We're talking about a subtle physical blemish. The Gemara gives as but one example, Dukin Shabayin. It is the classic example of the Gemara whenever we talk about the quote-unquote minor physical blemishes. Dukin Shabayin generally is translated as cataracts, but basically it's a real subtle, it is a physical blemish, right? The eye of the animal is clouded. You could see it, but it's subtle. In other words, it's not like there is a actual physical limb missing from the animal. By the way, when we get to Bechoros, the Gemara is going to discuss in detail what is a physical blemish, what isn't a physical blemish, right? We'll have a better understanding later in Shabbos. But in the meantime, however, we're discussing one of the quote-unquote minor physical blemishes. Now, if an animal has a minor physical blemish, it's still a physical blemish. L'chatchila, you shouldn't shecht it as a carbon, but according to Rabbi Akiva, da'amar im alu lo yardu. Rabbi Akiva says that, you're right. Of course, if an animal has a physical blemish, major or minor, it is not to be shechted. However, according to Rabbi Akiva, what the Mizbeach is able to tolerate is one of these minor physical blemishes, where if the animal had Dukin Shabayin, if it had a cataract, and you shechted it as a carbon, and you brought up onto the Mizbeach all things you shouldn't have done, but if you're at this point in time, and now the carbon's on the Mizbeach, lo yardu, don't bring it down from the Mizbeach is able to tolerate it. So you see there is some tolerance level for this kind of quote-unquote minor physical blemish. And so therefore, even though it was obviously there before the shechita, but because it's minor, because the Mizbeach is able to tolerate it, so therefore the bread will be imbued with Kedusha. The Rabbi Yehoshua, now as far as Rabbi Yehoshua is concerned, what would be his counter-argument? Because he doesn't agree, meaning he certainly, we have to assume that Rabbi Yehoshua is also talking about Dukin Shabayin. But in other words, but he doesn't agree. Now, ki amar Rabbi Kiva malo lo yardu bepsula de gufe. Aval dusha lechem lo. Rabbi Shua's counter-argument is very good. Look, right? Let's assume, like Rabbi Kiva, let's assume that a minor physical blemish, if it goes on to the Mizbeach is able to tolerate it. Good. That's vis-a-vis the animal per se. But remember, that's not our discussion. Our discussion is, when is the accompanying bread going to be receiving kedusha sagof? The shechita has to be a shechita where I'm shechting a proper animal. This animal is not a proper animal. So you want to talk about the animal itself vis-a-vis its allowance to be put up onto the Mizbeach. You can have that discussion. And Rabbi Kiva does allow it, right, after the fact. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the ability of the shechita to give kedusha seguf to the bread. And for that, what I would argue, says Rabbi Yehoshua, which is, by the way, the chachamim of our Mishnah, is that no. In other words, being that it has a physical blemish and you shouldn't shecht it, so that means to say that it's not going to imbue the bread with kedusha seguf. Okay, period. Okay, yeah.
The korban is a good korban? It works?
Is it going to, did the owner get credit for such a korban? Right. I don't know the answer. Okay, it's a reasonable question. Itmar, chata sheshachta chutz zmana, imalta lo sered. chutz limkama. Now, if I shechta kar mechatas and it with the chutz mana, so if it goes onto the mizbeach, so it is left on the top of the mizbeach, it does not come down. Chutz limkama. If, however, let's say one were to shech the karmen chatas with a machshava of chutzim koma, Rav Amar Tered, Rabba Amar Lo Sered. So machlokis amarayim as to whether or not the animal can, should be taken down from the mizbech or not be taken down from the mizbech. Rava says it should, Rabba says it should not. Now Rava ki Rebbe Yoshua. Now Rava's position over here parallels that of Rebbe Yoshua, meaning Rava is just simply following the position of Rabbi Yeshua, as we explained earlier, and Rabba Karebi Eliezer, and Rabba holds like the position of Rabbi Eliezer. V'hadabe Rabba legabi de Rava, midahadabe Rabbi Eliezer legabi de Rabbi Yeshua. Now, we have found in the Brisa, now by the way, mind you, this is all Rabbi Yehuda's version of the Machlokas. We found in the Brisa that Rabbi Eliezer eventually conceded to Rabbi Yeshua, and similarly, as a parallel, we also find that Rava ends up conceding to Rabba. Other way around. Rabba, with a hay, ends up conceding to Rava. The Igadarma, the Gemara brings in a slightly different version of this debate discussion. Avagav da hadarbe Rabbi Eliezer, legabe de Rabbi Yeshua, Rabba, legabe de Rava, lo hadarbe. Although in the Brisa we found the Rabbi Eliezer ended up conceding and yielding to Rabbi Yeshua, that's not the case regarding Rabba and Rava. Why not? Because if you recall in the Brisa, what was one of the counterpoints that Rabbi Yeshua made to Rabbi Eliezer? Why don't we take into consideration Shelo Lishmo? Shelo Lishmo, although it's a disqualification, if it goes up onto the Mizbech, you don't take it down. Now over here, remember, we're not talking about any carbon per se, we're talking specifically about a carbon chatas. What do we all know about a carbon chatas? That if you have a shelo lishmo machshava by a carbon chatas, it disqualifies a carbon chatas. But over here, with the shelo lishmo, so im alta lo seirein, meaning over here by the carbon chatas. So if it goes up, it shouldn't bring it back down again, meaning it's a carbon chatas. It disqualifies a carbon. Okay. Shachta shelo lishmo. Amar Rav Papa Shavak Tani Didan El Nazir Dishchiach Venatel Venaket El Hamiluim. So, Rav Papa is making an observation. You look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is giving a listing of karbanos that are animal and bread, have an animal bread connection, right? And look at the list of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about the Karban Todah, and it's talking about the El Hamiluim and the Kifsei Atzeres. And noticeably absent in the Mishnah, conspicuously absent from the Mishnah, is the Isle of the Nazir. The Isle of the Nazir, as we discussed in yesterday's daf, also has this kind of complement of an animal with accompanying bread. Why didn't the Mishnah, meaning the halacha is the same, why didn't the Mishnah just simply give El Nazir as one of the examples? And compounded, part of his observation is also compounded by the fact that the Miluim was a historical event. El Nazir, right, in the time when there was a Beis HaMikdash, it happens all the time. I don't know about all the time, but obviously, in other words, there are occurrences. So why is our Mishnah not talking about El Nazir? So the Gemara says, V'naket al Miluim, V'tanei Didan, Iker Mil Sanakat. So our Mishnah, choosing the Miluim, so the way Rashi explains it, I'm looking at the top Rashi, the way Rashi explains it, is that El Hamiluim Shebo Kitshu Halechem Tchila. In other words, it was the first one that occurred historically, so therefore that's why the Mishnah brought it up, even though it is just that. It's historical. It's not something that recurs numerous times. Okay. Next Mishnah. We've been talking in this parak about a carbon with attachments, so now we're going to transition over to the Nesachim. Now, it's not exactly the same, but it's very similar. Nesachim, when you bring a standard carbon, so you have what in English translates as libations, but basically attachments to a carbon. Now, the Nesachim of a standard carbon are oil and flour mixed together. A ratio of oil and flour is different than your standard mincha. Your standard mincha is one isaron coupled with one log shemen. Your Nesachim have, in terms of your oil and flour, significantly more oil than that of a standard mincha. But either way, in other words, it's oil and flour mixed together. where that is going to be burned in its entirety on the Mizbeach, and wine, where the wine is going to be poured on the top of the Mizbeach, not on the fire, but rather on tubes, on pipes that are on the top of the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. And so therefore, these Nesachim are going to be imbued with Kedusha, just like we discussed regarding our Todah, and the Meluim, and the El Nazir, and the Shtei Alechem. So with the Shechita of the animal, so the Mincha is going to be given now the status of Kedusha Saguf. So the same thing is going to be true regarding the Nesachim. With the Shechting of the Karban, the Nesachim are going to be imbued with Kedusha Saguf, says the Mishnah. Ha Nesachim Shekitchu Bekli, V'nimsa Zevach Pasol. So in the Nesachim that were sanctified in the Kli. Now the wording of the Mishnah is not clearly the way I just presented it, so hold that thought. Meaning it sounds like from the Mishnah that when are the Nesachim imbued with Kedusha? Once they're put into the Kli Sharis. So hold on to that thought for just a moment. V'nimsa Zevach Pasol. Now let's say the carbon turns out to be disqualified. Are the Nesachim transferable? The Mishnah says yes. Im yesh Zevach Acher yakriv v'yimol. So take the Nesachim and just simply transfer it to another carbon. The Im Lav, or the other girsa of the Mishnah, is the Im Lanu, Yifsilu Belina. If, however, they stay overnight, they will be disqualified through the Psul of Lina, meaning now that they were imbued with Kedusha Zagof, so they have now all the sensitivities that would create a disqualification by carbon. Notably, Lina stays overnight, so you can't bring it tomorrow. It's disqualified. Now, I know we just learned the Mishnah, and I know the Mishnah talks about placing into a kli, but Amr Ziri, start the Gemara. Eina Nesachim is kachim ela b'shechita sezevach. When do the Nesachim get imbued with Kedusha Zeguf? With the Shechita of the carbon. Now, my time, I'm across. Zevach u Nesachim. Because read the pasuk carefully as it describes the relationship between a carbon and a Nesachim. Now, Zevach means, loosely translated, just simply means carbon. But more literally translated, it actually means the act of Shechita. So Zevach u'Nesachim. And that would seem to indicate that at what point do the Nesachim receive the Kedusha Saguf? The answer seemingly would be with the Shechita. Good. So, and now, truth of the matter is that if I would have thought about it, makes perfect sense. Meaning, consider what we learned in the course of yesterday's daf and the beginning of today's daf. With a mincha that is accompanying a karban, like the Todah, like all the other examples that we discussed, so the Kedusha Saguf is going to be given into the bread with the shechting of the karban. So, model-wise, same thing over here by Nesachim. The problem, of course, is our Mishnah. You read the Mishnah, you reread the Mishnah, doesn't seem like that's what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah says, Tanam, we looked at the Mishnah, Nesachim Shekishu Bekleiv, Nimsa Zevach Pasol, Im Yeh Zevach Acher Yakriv Imo, V'im Lav Yifsalu Belina. Now, the Mishnah taught us that if I have the Nesachim that were placed into a Kli Sharis, so it sounds like from the Mishnah that at that point in time now it's imbued with Kedusha Zeguf. And if something went wrong with this carbon, so then it's transferable to another carbon. My love, the Ifsol Bishchita. Now, at what point in time did the carbon go awry? Presumably the carbon went awry at Shechita, but wait one second. If the Nesachim are not imbued with Kedusha until the Shechita, if something went awry with the Shechita, so then these Nesachim are never imbued with Kedusha Zeguf. Why are we even talking about transferring them to another carbon? So the Gemara says, Lo, de ifso bezrika. So the Gemara says, no, you misunderstood. Meaning what the Mishnah was talking about when it meant disqualification is that disqualification did not occur at the time of Shechita, but rather at a later stage, meaning Zrika. And so what we're now arguing is that the Shechita was a successful Shechita, and therefore the Nesachim were imbued with Kedusha Saguf, and then only at a later stage at Zrika, something went wrong, and now I'll take Nesachim and simply transfer it over to another carbon. So the Gemara says,
you can't transfer the bread over to another carbon.
Hold that thought. So the Gemara, you're right. Just we're going to get there. So Kiman Kirebi Da Amar Shnei Dvar Mamatirim Malim Zebelo Zeh. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Let us take us back in time in our Masechta, where we talked about the relationship between the Kifsei Atzeres and the Shtei Alechem. And we talk about how, by the shechting of the Kifsei Atzeres, that will be giving the Shtei Alechem its Kedusha. Now, we had a debate earlier in the Masechta. Is it the Shechita? Is it the Shechita coupled with the Zrika? So the Gemara says, are we now saying that it's the Shechita by itself? And that means that our Mishnah is following the viewpoint of Rebbe. So the Gemara says, no, afilu tamer Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Hacha b'mayiskin could go in shekibel daman b'kos v'nishbach. It could very well be that we had a successful shechita and a successful zrika, even before the zrika is done. Now, I know what I just said is got to be so confusing. In other words, we had a I'll say it again. We had a successful shechita and a successful zrika even before the zrika is done. How could it be successful zrika before the zrika is done? You wonder. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Savala Kavase Davua. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon subscribes to his father's viewpoint, which is Damar Kalam Lizro Kizarok Dami, that anything that stands to be sprinkled is viewed as if it's already sprinkled. So therefore, as long as we are in a position where we're ready to sprinkle, so Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, following his father's view of Kol HaOmed, tells us that halachically we view it as the zrika is already done. Since we're viewing it that way, now the Nesachim are imbued with Kedushas HaGuf, and now that's what the Mishnah is describing. Okay, so where do we stand right now? The Nesachim are going to be given Kedushas HaGuf, upgraded and given Kedushas HaGuf at what point? At the Shechita of the Karban. Could be, in other words, Gemara just entertained, could be Shechita and Zrika, but certainly at the Shechita of the Karban, that's going to be, it's going to be imbued with Kedushas HaGuf. Now, what happens if, let's say, something went awry with a carbon? So what do I do with the Nesachim? I simply transfer it over to another carbon. Now the Gemara says, really? So, if I have oil, which I earmarked and dedicated for this particular mincha, and for whatever reason I can't use it for this mincha, I can't take the oil and reroute it to another mincha. Once designed and determined for this mincha, it can only complement this mincha, not any other mincha. And so, Danny, here's your question. So now, how can you just take Nesachim that was earmarked and designated for one carbon and just simply reroute it to another carbon? It's a simple question. It's a basic question. So Amar Rabbi Yana, the Gemara gives a powerful answer because it's really a profound question. I'm Rabbi Yanai, lay based in Masna Alehem, im hitzruchu hitzruchu v'im lav yehu lezevach acher. So now the Gemara introduces a concept which we've said over a number of times, and that is the idea of lay based in. Lay based in means that when certain things are nikdash, are sanctified, so based in says yes, but only under our terms and our conditions, and we have the authority and the ability to retroactively remove the Kedusha and so that it can be now used for something else. Now this is a very this is a very powerful concept. It doesn't have a lot of application. Meaning even though the Chachamim do have this kind of power and ability, it's really limited in terms of the number of times they use it. In fact, as we're going to see in just a couple minutes from now, their power is going to be even in scenarios where they could use it. If there's an alternative, they prefer not to use it. Meaning it is the ace card, it's the trump card that the Chachamim have in terms of imbuing things with Kedusha, but with really, really limited application. Now, Ihachi Sheminami, so the Gemara says, okay, so if Beis Din is ready to use this card of Lev Beis Din Masna Alehem, so why are the Chachamim ready to take Nesachim? Now remember, by the way, in this scenario, what are we doing with this power of Beis Din? All we're doing is basically taking Nesachim and recycling them for another carbon. Meaning that we're not losing any carbon per se. We're just taking something which couldn't be used for this carbon for whatever reason, and we're just simply rerouting it to another carbon. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so what about the oil example of Rav Chista? Rav Chista says oil cannot be rerouted. Why not? So the Gemara says, Shem and Gufa Deminchahi. The Gemara says, no, because you understand the intrinsic relationship between oil and a mincha. Oil is not something external to the mincha. Oil is not an attachment to the mincha. Oil is part and parcel of a mincha. It's the very component of a mincha. Nesachim, on the other hand, are just simply attachments. So it can detach and reattach to another carbon. So the Gemara says, "V'lesno alem denefka luchulin." So the Gemara says, "Well, if Lev Beis Din is ready to detach and reattach, why not just simply say, well, let us dissolve the Kedusha altogether." The Gemara says, no, Gzer Shem Yomer Mosim Miklisharis Lechol. Once any onlooker sees that happening, so they're going to say to themselves, wow, something went into a Klisharis and then just came out and goes to Chulin, not understanding the principles of Lev Beis Din, and so therefore they're going to erroneously conclude, oh, I see, that can happen. So even though legally it could happen, but the Chachamim didn't want to create any such appearances. So the Gemara says, Hashanam, Igzer Hashem Yarmun Nesachim, Sheifrishlam Shem Zevach Zek, Shem Lushem Zevach Acher. Well, the Gemara says, if we're worried about, quote-unquote, Maris Ein, I'm using the term loosely, but if we're worried about appearances, so what are we doing? We're detaching the Nesachim from one carbon, reattaching it to another carbon. Now, I can do that, but only under limited circumstances and only using the principle of Lev Beis Din. Otherwise, it, in other words, you can't. So the Gemara says, but if we're worried about appearances, well, if Nesachim are going to be detached and reattached to another carbon, so isn't that a prime concern for appearances? So the Gemara says, yes, you're right. But hatini matisya ben Yehuda kigon shayez zevach zavuach beoso shah. So like I said earlier, even when the Chachamim use this kind of power of Lev Beis Din, they're only using it under really limited circumstances. And the Gemara here puts a significant limitation, notably that we're only going to take the Nesachim, detach it from this carbon, which was disqualified, and reattach it to another, but only under the circumstances where there is another carbon right there, already shechted, and now being prepared for the to be put up onto the Mizbeach. If it already had its own Nesachim, so then I...
But the assumption is there's own Nesachim accompanying. So how could that be?
Okay, I hear you. Like I said.
Or does it go in on top of the Nesachim that are already associated?
I hear the question. I definitely hear the question. I imagine that it didn't have Nesachim for whatever reason. Again, it's like I said earlier. In other words, they're significantly limiting this power. Aval ein zevach zavuch b'osa shah mai nifsa b'lina. So the Gemara says, okay, so now here's what you're telling me. You're telling me that if I have Nesachim of a carbon and the carbon goes awry, and now we can reattach it, but not under any circumstances, only under really limited circumstances, where I had another carbon already there in the base of Mikdash, already being prepared for the Mizbeach, only under those circumstances. So the Gemara says, so adini seifa imlav yifsilu belina. So when the Mishnah says, otherwise it should be disqualified with lina, liflog velisne bididei. Put this distinction in the Mishnah. It's a better distinction, it's a finer distinction. And have the Mishnah read as follows. Ba'medvar mamorim shayi says zevach zevuch boso shah. When can we detach and reattach Nesachim to another carbon? Only when there was another carbon standing by. Avalein zevach zevuch boso shah lo. Otherwise you can't. Why didn't the Mishnah say that? That would have been a better distinction to be made. So hachi nami ka'amar. Hachi nami ka'amar. So the Gemara says, when you read the Mishnah, this is how we're going to read the Mishnah, meaning understand that as what the Mishnah is saying. If you don't have another carbon on the ready at that moment, it is as if it becomes disqualified with Lina, and therefore becomes disqualified. And finally, just to conclude the sugya, Amar of Amran, Amar of Yitzchak, Amar of Yochanan, to meet him Shalahutzrich Lutzibor, Lediv Rabbi Shimon, Einiftin Tamimin. So, at the end of every calendaric year, fiscal calendaric year in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the last day of Adar, so what we have is a problem at the end of every year. It's a built-in problem to the system. And that is that we know that we have six animals prepared and ready for your carbon Tamid. However, the problem is that this next year's Karbanos, and the next fiscal year begins Rosh Chodesh Nisan, has to be brought with next year's operating budget. And next year's operating budget is all the Machzitz HaShekel that were collected over the course of the month of Adar. And now what's going to happen is that these animals at the end of the previous year cannot be used for the upcoming years, as those animals were purchased with last year's money. It's a built-in problem to the system. So the Gemara says, so what do you do? So, according to Rabbi Shimon, you're going to have to wait, allow them to graze, get a blemish, and that's it. And Ledivrei Chachamim, Niftin Tamim, and according to the Chachamim, they're going to be redeemed unblemished. So, they're going to be redeemed unblemished. Why? How can they be redeemed unblemished? Because, Lev Beis Din Masna Lehem. Because even as the Beis HaMikdash purchased them, Nevertheless, they were imbued with Kedusha conditionally. And since now the condition warrants that the Kedusha goes away, the Kedusha is going to go away. And it could be redeemed, even though it's unblemished. What we just learned together is that Rabbi Shimon does not subscribe to the idea of Lev Beis Din. And meanwhile, in explaining Rabbi Shimon, we just use the principle of Lev Beis Din. Shani Hasam Deis Lei Takanta B'Ra'aya. So the Gemara says, you're right. Rabbi Shimon does subscribe to the idea of Lev Beis Din, but again, only as a last resort. Only if there is no other solution. If, however, there is another solution, so even Rabbi Shimon, who does subscribe to the concept of Lev Beis Din, but will have limited application of Lev Beis Din if there, in fact, is there another solution. At the end of every year, there is another solution. It's not an elegant solution, but take those animals, let them graze, develop a blemish, and then we'll redeem them. So since there's another solution, so therefore we're not going to fall back on Lev Beis Din. In the case of the Nesachim, where I had Nesachim set aside for this carbon, and now the carbon went awry, and now I need him to detach and retach him to another carbon, using the principle of Lev Beis Din, yeah, because there's nothing, there's no other solution to solve for that problem.